Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
It has been different. Yeah, we've been, there were just some imbalances, you know, we found that could have caused the pain, the stuff that was happening. So made some adjustments. It's similar, but just different cues and focus on a couple different body parts.
Middays on the Score.
The professor, he can know his own game, and he knows when he's ready, and he knows whether or not he needs a rehab start before returning to the major leagues. And apparently, as I understand it, just some sources have said there wasn't 100% agreement. I'm not saying there was any kind of a fight about it or ever rose to that, but there was a desire from some in the organization that Hendricks make sure everything's all lubed up enough and ready to go in the minors, be it Iowa or South Bend, and if you wanted to stay a little closer to home, just to get it going against some hitters there before standing up there against Josh Bell. But in fact, it was Hendricks himself who said, nope, I'm ready, and I'm going to go right back to it. I don't know if it has something to do with Cole Hamels being out or with the team facing some struggles and coming off a losing month, but he made it very clear. And per the collective bargaining agreement, The player must agree. You cannot impose. A team cannot force a player to do a minor league rehab.
Well, I mean, if it's collectively bargained, it's collectively bargained. I think the team trusts Carl Hendricks to diagnose his own mechanical issues. Not that he has to do it on his own. They're not looking at him like, all right, well, that's on you, and we're not helping. But they've trusted him before, and he's fixed things before. So at least there's that baseline going into it. I would imagine, I was reading through Gonzo's piece after the game and what he's expecting, the Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune, like 65, 70 pitches for Kyle Hendricks in the start today. Which, if that's the case, you know, after a night like last night, you can kind of see why Joe left Adbert Alzolay in as long as he did, knowing that, well, the kid's got to wear it a little bit tonight. And then Brad Brock comes in, and he's been doing nothing but wearing it, it feels like, all season long.
Oh, he's wearing too many things. He's been a storefront mannequin.
He was like Joey and Friends, wearing everybody's everything. He had that brief, like, week and a half, it felt like, of appearances where it was like, oh, okay, I could see him maybe turning into a somewhat valuable bullpen piece. Maybe he'll come around. Then he gets shellacked again last night, so that goes out the window. I don't know, you know, if how desperate things feel within the pitching staff right now heading into the All-Star break. It certainly feels somewhat desperate from the outside with the way the results have gone over the last four or five road series. Certainly feels a little desperate with Cole Hamels laid up, the guy who was pitching like your ace, and Kyle Hendricks, who was also pitching like an ace until he got roughed up in the start he came out early on, the one that he gave up to injury that he's coming back from tonight. It does feel a little bit like you're just kind of hanging on to what you're hanging on to pitching-wise.
If you're just joining us, early in the show, we had a lively bank of callers expressing some of their misgivings over what's going on with the Cubs lately and comparing the Cubs to some of the really good MLB teams. The difference between the Dodgers and the Astros, say, and what the Cubs are doing is the fact that Cubs have parted with a lot of organizational talent, and they just have not replaced it by developing or supplementing their system with guys that they have built into something that they were not perhaps expected to be, like the Dodgers do and like the Astros do. And, you know, Joe Sheehan pointed it out, too, that the depth in the lineup right now isn't there. However, it's more about run prevention than it is run creation at this point.
Yeah, and to that end, you know, I was looking through, I just went to MLB Trade Rumors and, you know, was looking through pending free agents just because. Not that they can't go out and spend the system on a guy like Whit Merrifield, who's signed to a really comfortable deal and is one of the better hitters and pretty damn good defensive players to work at second base in a pretty much full-time basis. Not that they can't do that. It's just that it feels like it would cost everything. It's not going to be as simple as Schwarber from Merrifield, who says no, steak dinner, boom. Like, that's not the horizon, right?
Who thinks Schwarber has all this value? Like, we're not talking about 2015 Kyle Schwarber here.
Well,
this isn't Babe F and Ruth.
For what it's worth, I do think that, you know, as I was reading through some of the numbers, the weighted runs created plus, just kind of the one measure offensive stat for the guys, Schwarber, Almora, and Russell. Schwarber's at 102, Almora's 75, Russell at 84.
75.
And I kind of feel like, maybe I'm wrong, maybe Cubs fans can tell me I'm wrong here, but I kind of feel like whichever of those three had the highest number, whichever one of those three looked, you know, the most decent, would be the guy anyway that they're looking to move. Because you understand that you have to have some kind of current value to recoup something that's going to give you future value. You need to do that in baseball. You have to give up something to get something. So I think it's a little bit fungible there. I do think, though, if you're going to look at some of these free agent targets, or free agent to be targets, not for next season, but guys you could acquire this year that might walk, you're looking at a guy like Neil Walker at 34 years old, who's playing a hell of a lot of first base these days. I assume he could play a little second base, but that's a guy who's going to be a free agent and might go. Elvis Andrus can opt out of three remaining years at $43 million, but I don't think he's going to. He's having a nice little season. You want Jose Iglesias? I don't think Cincinnati's going to give him up to you. I don't think you want Starlin Castro. He's having a terrible season. Scooter Gennett just came back. I don't think the Reds are giving up on him either. You know, there just aren't a lot of dudes that fit that second base spot that feel like gettable guys necessarily. And in terms of penning, maybe you want to swing the bat on Adam Jones. You know, he's still got a lower half that carries. He's very proud of that ass. He works out the whole deal. I saw him at the Diamondbacks game. He's enjoying himself at 34. Not a terrible go, but the Cubs had a shot at him in free agency. Could have added in that fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder kind of guy. Didn't do that. He's having an okay season. Maybe you trust Jason Hayward to play a little bit more center field. Maybe Albert Almora. These are your options. There aren't necessarily any standout ones, at least not to me, from guys who would be pending free agents that would let you keep a guy like Alzolay, keep a guy like Nick Horner, keep a guy like Cole Roederer. These are all big names in a Cubs farm system that's been somewhat depleted of late.
I think you made an important point earlier that needs to be revisited, too, about the always popular, if not populist, concept of trading for trade's sake, do something because of what it says to the team and how it can galvanize everybody. I just want someone to show me one of those trades that was done that, and not just saying it after the fact because of that, you know, post hoc ergo propter hoc fallacy.
Sure.
Like what could be certainly agreed upon as a time when a Major League Baseball team shook it all up with a trade, and that sent the message to make everybody play baseball harder.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't know that that's out there, because in order, obviously you can never test the counterfactual. You can't test for the thing you can't see, I guess, but that would mean that you'd have to find a trade out there for a bad player, but it was a trade for trade's sake, therefore it galvanized the team and moved them forward, like you say. I'm more and more interested in some sort of deal that looks like the Nomar Garciaparra deal. I'm more interested in finding
from
out
the Red Sox side of it, though, not from the Cubs side of it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, it's interesting to me. I just don't know that you've got pieces you're willing to move of enough value that gets the dude back that fixes this lineup, that helps even things out some.
This is what the Boston Herald wrote on August 1st, 2004. In one of the most momentous transactions in the modern annals of the 103-year-old franchise.
Wow, write a lead.
Well, that's the second paragraph. I skipped the lead. Here's the lead. He was the face of the Red Sox, a superstar in the mold of the legendary Ted Williams, whose indelible achievements will endure in the memories of generations of New Englanders, and now he is gone.
My God. Is there a shirtless Nomar photo to start the Globe's day?
And this isn't like 1930. That's only 15 years ago, and it reads like Ring Lardner.
That's amazing.
In one of the most momentous transactions in the modern annals of the 103-year-old franchise.
Like Keith Jackson.
The Red Sox yesterday ended their decade-long relationship with Nomar Garciaparra. dispatching the two-time American League batting champion to the Chicago Cubs in a four-team deal aimed at shoring up Boston's flawed defense.
So flawed. God, that defense was bad.
Remember, under the multi-pronged deal, the Sox sent the shortstop to the Cubs with single-A outfield prospect Matt Merton.
Matty.
And received two former Gold Glovers, shortstop Orlando Cabrera from the Expos.
Who everyone hated.
Oh, God. That's used to call the official scorer all the time to get out of errors, all that. And first baseman Doug Mankiewicz from the Twins. Mankiewicz immediately switched uniforms and started at first base last night for the Red Sox against his former team. It was with mixed emotions that we let Nomar go, general manager Theo Epstein said. After hours of highly complex maneuvering culminated with Garcia Parra's sudden departure, he's been one of the greatest Red Sox of all time. And driven by a number of factors, most notably the great likelihood the Sox would lose Garcia Parra to free agency after the season. He harbored deep resentment over the way they tried to replace him last winter with Alex Rodriguez. And Epstein's belief that the Red Sox defense potentially harbored a fatal flaw.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the defense from Nomar at that time was real bad. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the infield defense from the Cubs is necessarily that bad. It's still, you know, kind of...
And that's what, a 31-year-old Theo Epstein at that time?
Was
that right?
Was it 2004?
2004.
Oh, God, yeah, I guess it would have been. I think defensively, I'd be okay. This is just me. But obviously, Joe is not of this mind, Joe Madden. Joe's not of the mind to play David Bote full-time at second base and just eat what's... not happening with Daniel Descalso. Not that it's his call to designate a guy that's got a contract or anything. And Addison Russell does absolutely nothing for me offensively. And when you're looking at evening out a lineup, and by that I mean a little bit more bat on ball, a little bit more on base percentage, you could probably do better than David Bote, but I don't know that guy's on in your roster. That guy seems he's got a 104 weighted to runs created plus. He can go to both fields. You've seen a little bit of pop from him, and yeah, the defense makes you irpy at times. But he's not Daniel Murphy, and he's not even well. I won't do the Dan Uggla thing, but he's fine. And if that's more playing time that just needs to be secured by David Bote, then that's something internally you can play around with before you get to having call up a Robel Garcia and make a drastic 40-man move or make a trade that might spin somebody that you'd hoped a lot from off the roster before they get to realizing that kind of potential.
And as this is all going on, texters want us to address a larger question, and I think it's perfectly fair to ask this, and the 309 does. Is firing Joe Madden on the table? The 815. Do you think Joe will finish the year? Might they make a managerial change at the All-Star break? I don't think it's an unfair question for a team that is playing the way this team is playing. The answer's usually probably not.
Yeah, I think probably not. I kind of went into the season thinking that you would need to see a cratering by the Cubs in order for Joe Madden to be removed during the season. And while this is, you know, the first losing month, June rather, was the first losing month for the Cubs since 2017, I wouldn't call that a cratering. They're certainly not playing up to their potential, and they are maddening, especially when they're making decisions in the outfield, like Albert Almora made last night, trying to go behind the back after he'd overrun.
Yeah, it was weird.
It's a bad choice. It's a bad decision. So... I don't think so. I think it'd have to get much... I think it'd probably get much worse in order to make a decision like that. But I wouldn't blame any kind of Cub fan for wondering whether that's something that's a potential.
I think because we've walked ourselves into this, we can't forget about the fact that, like you say, he's been dangling the way he's been dangling. The segment brought to you by the Art of Pizza. The Art of Pizza celebrating 30 years in Lakeview. Mm. Art of Pizza located at 3033 North Ashland. Stop in for up to 18 varieties of hot, fresh, stuffed pan and thin crust slices. Delivery begins 11 a.m. every day. Call 773-327-5600 or visit artofpizzachicago.com. Football talk next with Bears safety Eddie Jackson. Keep it here. You got the score.
Ah!
Live radio being what it is, sometimes things happen, and sometimes even in football you are thrown a curveball, and not 40 seconds after we went to break and told you Eddie Jackson was joining us, Eddie Jackson's publicist called Jay Zawoski and said, yeah, we're running late, and he's not going to be able to come on until much later.
Well,
so
that's too bad. I would have liked to talk to Eddie Jackson.
Yeah, that's too bad. He's conducting a football camp at the moment, which was one of the reasons we were going to have him on over at Benedictine University, and get an opportunity to grab him, put him on, and talk to him about what he's got going on, and what's happening with Chuck Pagano and everything else that the defense is trying to do.
Playing with his old buddy, Ha Ha Clinton Dix.
Correct.
All that stuff. That would have been a joy. I don't know about you. I know sometimes things get salty in this business, but I am prepared to give Eddie Jackson another spin of the wheel. I'm not going to give up on him.
Oh, I'm not mad at him.
Okay, good. I just wanted to check in and see where you're at on that.
No,
kind
the
of
camp
thing.
Is running late. I'd rather have him be out there with the kids.
Hanging out with children
teaching
and enjoying
defense.
Football. Yeah, all right, fair enough. I just wanted to make sure we're all on the same page here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, that we were all prepared to give Eddie Jackson one more chance to join the show. He's more than welcome.
There are some very scared, frightened, nervous Cub fans out there that are burning up the text lines with all sorts of blaming and pointing and angry and texting. Theo should be gone. Hayward, Descalso, Chatwood, Darvish, Schwarber, Russell. I'm shocked the team has played as well as they have the last two seasons. If Kimbrell sucks, Theo Epstein needs to go.
Clammers!
That's from the 847.
I mean, part of the reason they're playing as well as they have, despite the fact that Theo and Jed have made those horrible additions you mentioned, is because Theo and Jed drafted pretty well at the top of the draft and put together a fairly decent rest of the squad. I mean, you got to take your pluses and your minuses. I'm more and more open to seeing where this season really does end up. I remain pretty confident that they are the best team in the National League Central. I mean, fairly confident that 89, 88 wins, maybe 91 tops wins the thing. I don't see, I mean, barring an unforeseen level of trade that either the Cubs, Brewers, or Cardinals make, which I don't know that they're necessarily capable of, any of them, or barring like a horrible run of injury for either one team, I don't see anybody running with this thing. They've shown you over half a season of baseball that getting on a heater is really difficult. And the only team that's really shown you that for a long period, I mean, the Cardinals did have a 10-game stretch in there, but the Cubs went on that ridiculous run, right, as they kind of always do. And I don't know if this does anything for you. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. I think Joe haters are probably pretty firmly entrenched in their hatred of Joe, so I don't know that it's going to turn you around. In the first three seasons with Joe Maddon at the helm, I think I took this from Patrick Mooney's write-up, the Cubs were a .671 club in the second half of the season, a .671 winning percentage versus a .540 clip in the first half. Last year, of course, it didn't work out that way. .591 in the first half, .571 in the second half. That, of course, due to the offense breaking. We all talked about that when the season ended. There are a good number of people smarter than I am who look at this team. I was texting with tweeting with one back and forth a little bit last night, who are worried about the long-term and top-down direction of the club and whether or not it's in the right place. But, you know, I think those kind of drastic changes don't happen until you've got a full season of potentially cratered baseball. And I just don't see that from this spot right now. I it's really hard for me to do so. I think maybe the most alarming thing for me when you look at this team is the fact that Adbert Alzolay is pretty much the first homegrown arm that you've seen thrown into a big spot. Dylan Maples has been a ton of fun to watch and incredibly exasperating, and I'll never quit him because he's got nasty stuff, but that's the one other homegrown arm you can point to. And when you got a Dodgers franchise who's got all kinds of talent in the rotation, I mean, Ross Stripling is like their ninth guy, and he goes out there and throws pretty decent baseball. Walker Buehler comes up and does his thing. That doesn't happen, at least hasn't, for the Cubs. And they've relied on the same top-heavy, not quite stars and scrubs approach, but the same sort of top-heavy stuff for this run of baseball.
That was John Philip Sousa's most overrated march, I think.
Which one?
Stars and scrubs.
Stars and scrubs?
Approach, yeah.
It was your 2016 White Sox march is what it was.
Yeah.
And, for the first half.
My large picture issue here, it isn't the fact that they got shellacked last night, but that sucked. That really was that was a kick in the balls is what that was last night. And it started immediately. I flipped the game on and I'm like, because we were staying in a hotel, I'm thinking, oh, we probably don't get the game, and we do get the game. I'm like, oh, we got it. And then it's just like kicking the balls, kicking the balls, and then television off. It's like, I don't need this anymore. I'll flip it back out if they get close. And then I'm following on my phone in the MLB app during the party, like, oh my God, it keeps getting worse. He hit another home run. Andre, you lost another submarine. I mean, it keeps happening. The issue for me is the overall quality of this starting staff. With Cole Hamels out, they have been plugging leaks. And with Kyle Hendricks apparently pushing back without a rehab start, I believe it is not necessarily in line with the desires of the team. Like I say, I don't know that it was some shouting match or some elevated conflict. I just was like, you know, it kind of prefer that you rehab, and I don't want to. I want to get back right now and help the team win. Lester's not doing anything either.
No.
Lester's not showing you anything.
No.
You know, who's that guy? Quintana threw well last time out, and we can be hopeful that they found something about that late life, that say that late finish. I couldn't get game-to-game spin rate data on that. I was still looking for game-to-game spin data on just that fastball that he's been throwing to see if indeed they actually did fix something. But night in and night out, you got to get a lead and hold a lead and get in your damn bullpen and make it matter. Because this is what Pecota was thinking. This is what Pecota spit out when they spat out that win total. It was largely based on not trusting an old pitching staff.
It was, and it was wrong to start most of the season. Granted, Quintana and Lester and even Hendricks to a certain degree have had downturns in this season, but each one of those guys have had, you know, pretty decent stretches as well. Hendricks was just coming off of one when he was pretty clearly hurt in his last start, or not 100% in his last start. So I think each one of those guys, each one of those three guys can catch fire for a little while. It's just pretty clear that no one of them has really grabbed a full season's worth the way, I'm going to say Max Scherzer, but that's kind of ridiculous to compare anybody to the best pitcher
that's
in baseball.
Fair.
Like
yeah.
that's just not fair. But I think you get where I'm going with it. And when you look at the overall holistic approach that the Cubs have tried to put onto this team, I guess, you know, in saying that they've constructed a top heavy lineup, isn't and rotation too, isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like I would rather have the kind of players who can get on streaks that take you to a World Series, that look and make your lineup incredibly fearsome, as opposed to a number of guys that need to string together a whole bunch of hits and hope you win one with the help of a terrific lockdown bullpen like the Royals did in 14 and 15. Like that's, I would rather do it the way the Cubs have chosen to do it. It's just that everybody else has kind of grabbed the reins on that approach and, oh, by the way, evaluated pitching a whole lot better than the Cubs have.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves will open the season on Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit chicagowolves.com. This is Chris in Palatine on the Score. Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say that the Cubs fans that are complaining and acting like, oh, this is bad, they've been the best team in the freaking league since 2015. They've won more games than anyone else. They've played in more playoff series. They are hurt. Some of them are old. Cole Hamels going down, that's expected possibly. You have to expect that kind of stuff. You know, these Cubs fans act like they got to win every game. They're not going to win forever. At some point, there's going to be problems. At some point, they're not going to be as good. That is just how this works. If you play in that many playoff series 5 years in a row, you're going to have some down times where you're tired. They've played more games than anybody else. I mean, just stop it. Stop crying.
I get it. I
mean, but
that's,
it's not hockey.
No, it's not.
But playing is, more games, I don't buy that.
I mean,
that
that's the view
general.
From 50,000
yeah.
feet is what that is. And that's true. I mean, it's worth remembering. Len points this out a lot, and it's worth doing it. Len Casper, who joins the show fairly regularly, you know, on a weekly basis, tomorrow, in fact. This is the greatest run in Cubs franchise history. This is it. This is the greatest it has ever been. The most sustained, the most well thought out. It just is. Cubs history is not all that shining and gold. I don't have to tell Cubs fans that, but this is what it is. That said, I don't think there's anything wrong, and I don't think there's anything amiss with Cubs fans trying to hold accountable this team to their own standards, and just a little bit peering into the future and wondering how long can this golden era last? You know, how long can guys remain the guys who are going to get free drinks for the rest of their lives at age 26 and 27 for winning a World Series? Like, Chris Bryant's free agency is not all that far away. Anthony Rizzo is now over 30. Javi Baez has all kinds of future left in him, but, this whole bunch is of swing and miss, and he needs some help in a lineup.
It's a mature competitive window is what it is. This is you're in the back end of the window here as far as competitiveness, and I think an indicator of that is the current state of your starting pitching and sort of how you've constructed a starting staff that we pointed out in spring training is on the more old-fashioned curve of how you set up a starting staff, how you set a pitching staff in general. And they might be changing the rules on some of that stuff, as Theo pointed out. But I'm mindful of something a very wise person told me when I was covering the second three-peat Bulls.
Okay.
And what was going on in there. And it was clear that the center couldn't hold. It was clear near the end that there were forces pulling the Bulls in different directions. And somebody said to me, because, you know, it was just one of these introspective nights. We're sitting at the bar. And he said, no matter what happens now, he said, instead of understanding in the moment how significant this is and enjoying this and appreciating this, mm-hmm. all that's going to happen is we're going to spend the next few years blaming people for how it ended. He said, and this is before it broke.
No kidding.
But this was, yeah. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I promise you. He said, the level of angst, the level of unhappiness and bitterness that you're going to hear from inside and outside after all this is going to be too much, and it's going to overshadow and overpower how excited and how everybody feels about it when it's actually happening. Hmm. We're not taking time to appreciate how special this is. He said, I can feel, because none of us are. Nobody involved. There are people within the team. There are people, he said, even there are players, there's management, there's fans. He said, nobody is really enjoying this. And I said, yeah, they go to Grant Park and they jump up and down, but it's still not in the moment. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, there wasn't really a solution to it. But man, was he right about the aftermath. He said, it's all going to be about pointing fingers and fault and who should have done this and what would have been here. And he said, it was before the title. He goes, if they finish this off, it's going to be six.
Yeah.
It'll be six. Because this stuff doesn't happen. This is a once in a lifetime thing.
Yeah. I was a little young to really grasp the bitterness of all of it when it broke up. But I missed Michael, obviously, and I wondered why, and I was angry that it was over. But I guess the bitterness and the particular infighting was a little lost on me at the time. Obviously, you pick that up as you go, and you read more about the breakup and things. Talk to guys like you who were there. Like I understand it. I don't think I'd ever allow a bitterness to envelop Cubs fans. I mean, when and if this is all said and done at some point, like...
Look at Blackhawks fans.
You can't... Right.
Look at what's... That's three Cups. They had a cluster of three titles. And those same fans now, like, in everything Stan Bowman does is wrong. And everything's always awful. And everything's the worst everything ever.
Even that is different than the story of the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series. That was one of the greatest, if not the greatest stories that was going to be written in sports history. It had been stewing for 100-some years. Like, it's different. And even still, you've had to say goodbyes along the way. You said goodbye to Jake Arrieta, and many weren't happy with Yu Darvish coming over. But go look at Jake Arrieta's numbers in Philly right now. Go ask them whether or not they're thrilled with the contract they'd signed him to. I think despite the controversial decision that got made, there's a so long and it's so hard to say goodbye to Jake, and I didn't feel, at least I don't see it, not a lot of bitterness there. This will end differently. Maybe there won't be zero bitterness, but it will end differently than those runs did. It has to, because the origin story of this was so unmistakably different and unrepeatable in major league sports, in big professional sports, than any other really could have ever been.
On the south side, it's Larry on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on the Score.
Hey, how you doing? Listen, I'm a Cub fan, and I watched this team. I watched this team last year. I watched this team this year. Last year, compared to the Brewer, I didn't think the Cubs team was good enough, and this is why. Schwarber's inconsistent. Chris Bryant been inconsistent. He hasn't hit with man's in scoring position. He can't hit good velocity, good pitching in late innings. I'm not trying to be a hater. I'm just stating what I see. And this year, I'm watching the same offense. They look like the same offense last year. They can't address it because the Ricketts won't give Theo any more money because they're already at their limit as far as spending money. So what? He has no farm system. So how could they improve the team? What trades are they going to make? So, I mean, I just think that the guys that they counted on, like Schwarber and Bryant and Almora and those guys, I mean, they haven't came through.
Well, I wouldn't include Bryant in that same group. Schwarber and Almora, absolutely, I would list as overall disappointments. Bryant's an MVP winner, and Bryant's an all-star again this year. Yeah, he does clearly have a situational issue. I'm not going to deny that.
Absolutely true.
But on balance, you take Chris Bryant.
I think most franchises would. There's a lot of players rocketing up the leaderboards right now, and if you want to take Chris Bryant and put the arrow pointing, I don't know, down for the next couple of years, you're welcome to do so. And I think you've got some evidence to point your way if you want. But I think a lot of teams are taking Chris Bryant. I do think, though, that after this season, once things are said and done this year, regardless of how it ends, I think there's going to be a conversation from a lot of different angles about Chris Bryant and his future, whether that's here, whether that extension looks like he wants it to look. There are a lot of forces acting on that future, on that coming decision for Chris. A lot of it has to do with the CBA. A lot of it has to do with the relationship between owners and players.
His agent?
That will not. Oh, and his agent in particular. Absolutely. That will not be an easy one for either this organization or for Bryant to resolve.
That's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. I'm going to give you reason for hope. I've got some new names, some new members of the Cubs organization. The Cubs have reportedly agreed to contracts with three of the top 30 international prospects. If I remember, this is where Gleyber Torres came from. This is where Eloy Jimenez came from.
That's correct.
This is where they found these guys, and internationally they've been pretty good at it. So there's three new names that you can learn.
Yeah, and I count those in draft and development. I really do. I mean, you got to, granted, we were talking about Joe Sheehan, and yes, it is even more of a crapshoot signing 16-year-olds when they're 14 and a half, because that's how these signings work, by the way. Just go ahead and read through it. These kids are being signed a lot earlier than 16 by a lot of different teams. But yeah, who knows? I mean, you got to find talent any way you can and add in as much as possible. Joe Maddon's coming up at noon. We've got Lawrence in transition in just a few. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670, The Score.
We're talking a lot about drafting and development, so I thought I'd just give you some names here, make you feel a little bit better if you're a nervous Cub fan today. Jesse Sanchez, MLB.com and MLB Pipeline, they know all these guys from all around the world, these 16-year-olds.
Yeah, Jesse Sanchez
here.
And Ben Badler, they're the guys.
Yeah, and what did Joe Sheehan refer to these guys as? Baseball zygotes. So the gamete and the gamete have just formed that single cellular human animal here. But among these top 30... the Cubs have reportedly signed number 6 overall prospect Ronier Quintero, a catcher from the Dominican Republic, with an estimated deal, a bonus of $3 million, it says here. Kevin Made, it's spelled like Made, M-A-D-E, a shortstop, Dominican Republic, the 11th prospect for $1.7 million. And then Brian Altuve, another catcher from Venezuela.
It's a lovely name.
I wonder if that is Altuve of the Altuves. I do not know. If he's like 3 feet tall, we probably would know. But that's the 30th overall prospect on the list for MLB Pipeline, reportedly signed by the Cubs. We want to thank Joe Sheehan for joining us today. Thanks to our producers, Zawoski Camp and Diaz. I went to Zawoski Camp for a couple years, though. You know, I got kicked out. Brian Gertz
had
the video feed. Joe Ostrowski, the updates. Mike Florio will join us at 10 o'clock tomorrow, and we'll see if Kyle Hendricks can right the ship and discuss all that. Transition with Lawrence next on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
We're at
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!